Hi, this is Rod Murray, and you're listening to Rod's Pulse Podcast number 3, a podcast for faculty and students interested in learning how to use and create podcasts to enhance teaching and learning. Here are some of the topics we'll be talking about today: hardware requirements, software requirements, or recommendations, really. We'll be talking about Cast Blaster, podcasting is not a fad. We'll be talking about iTunes University and some of the controversy surrounding that, and talk a little bit about a way to put podcasts into Blackboard. This is a commercial product by a company called Tegrity. And then I'm going to leave you with a promo about another podcast, which you might find very useful for TechPod, podcast for teachers. So that's what we'll be covering today. First, I thought I'd just tell you a little bit about the hardware that I use. I think on my last podcast I mentioned that I only really have about $50 worth of $50 investment in podcasting, and that's for some software I'll be talking about. I'm using a headset with the built-in microphone, little boom mic. It's a Yamaha MH500, which unfortunately I don't have the cost. I bought it probably a couple of years ago, but just about any microphone and headset will do. I did look it up. Apparently it's no longer being sold, and I did find a review of it, and they weren't too impressed with the actual microphone. So I'll be anxious to try some other microphones, see if it makes me sound more like a broadcaster. The other thing you're definitely going to need is something to connect your microphone to. Now, that may seem silly, but some computers here, probably at Jefferson, that were probably purchased without sound cards. So you will need a sound card. If you have a home machine, chances are it definitely has sound, because you're going to be listening to music and playing games and so on. Sound cards include, obviously, sound out, plus also a microphone sound input. If you have a computer without a sound card, you can get one pretty cheaply. Again, they're probably around $50 or even less for a sound card. You can easily do a search on Amazon or some other supplier. Now for software recommendations. You actually don't have to buy any software, but you may find that there are some packages that make your job a little easier. But if you want to get started slowly and just test things out, you could simply try Sound Recorder. It's a good way to check out your microphone, make sure it's working. And let me step through it with you. If you go to the, again, this assumes you have a Windows machine. If you click on the Start menu and you go up to All Programs, go up to Accessories, and go down to Entertainment, you will see Sound Recorder listed there. Okay, it's pretty limited. You can record, save, you can do some pretty simple kinds of editing, cutting and pasting. And it has one special effect, which is an echo. Here's a sample of a little recording on the built-in Windows Sound Recorder. Testing, 1, 2, 3, 4, how does this sound? Over and out. And if you want to, although I really don't know when you would use it, but it's one special effect is echo. Testing, 1, 2, 3, 4, how does this sound? Over and out. Now that might satisfy some of your initial testing, but you're probably going to want something a little bit more sophisticated to do your recording. There's a program called Audacity, and you can find this at audacity.sourceforge.net. Now, Audacity is a free, open source piece of software. It's free, and it's developed by an open source community, so you'll see that it's supported by volunteers. It can record live audio. You can convert, if you have the right inputs, you can record tapes and records into digital recordings or CDs. You can edit different formats, including MP3 and WAV sound files. You can cut, copy, splice, mix sounds together, change the speed or pitch of a recording. It has a lot of capabilities. So I tend to use Audacity for doing some fine tuning, and if you have a lot of ums and clicks and whatever, if you want to take the time, you can spend some time in post-production, meaning that once you've recorded your podcast, you can go back and cut out those clicks and ums. Now, I did purchase software, and as I mentioned in the past, I found out about this through Adam Curry's podcast called The Daily Source Code with Adam Curry. And I thought you might appreciate hearing a little bit about Cast Blaster from him. This is a brief introduction to his podcast. You can see his production value is certainly a lot more sophisticated than what I've got going here, but that's fine. So here's a typical introduction to the Daily Source Code.
$16 million worth of airplanes strapped to my ass. Transmitters? And the next generation radio content in my ears.
We don't need no stinking transmitter.
I like to think I'm flying into the future.
Podcasting is Adam Curry.
So that's his intro. He happens to be a pilot, so there's some reference there to flying and so on. And here's a little bit from Adam Curry about the Cast Blaster program.
And you can pretty much see where we're going with Cast Blaster. It's going to be a fully integrated solution. Obviously, you won't have to worry about creating RSS feeds and show blogs and up FTPing and uploading and doing ID3 tags. All of that will just be built into one simple process. You know, step one, step two, and there is no step three.
Well, there's probably going to be a step three. But he does talk about some terminology which I haven't spent much time on yet, and that is RSS feeds, how to upload, and so on. But we'll get to these details. So for the time being, though, you may be interested in testing Cast Blaster. This is the $50 piece of software. It's still technically in beta, but so many people liked the beta and it seemed to work for them that they decided to release it to the public, but expect to see some improvements along the line. I'm using it right now. It has little player buttons which you can pre-program with different sounds so that if I want to use the ever-popular boing sound, I can just click a button. You can load it with other kinds of sound effects, some of which come bundled with Cast Blaster, for example. Not that you would use many of them in your educational podcast, but they're fun to play around with. And then it has a long list of buttons that you can load other clips in, or if you're piecing together a podcast from audio files that were recorded at different times, maybe different recorders and so on, you can piece them together using Cast Blaster. It allows mixing, which is very nice. When I was just playing the Daily Source Code clip for you, as soon as a clip starts, I can unclick the talk button and the volume changes to enhance the volume on the clip that you're playing. And when you click the talk button again, it decreases the volume on the clip and raises the volume on the mic. So it gives your podcast a little bit more professional tone. I'll briefly mention some of the other features in Cast Blaster. When you are planning your podcast, you can describe it. You type in your name, the show's name, the episode name, and so on. These all go into ID3 tags. These are pieces of text or metadata that are linked to the MP3 file that you're eventually going to upload to your server. When you configure Cast Blaster, you're asked to pick the file compression rate and so on, and also information that Cast Blaster would need to upload the file to a server. In some cases, you can do this if you're managing your own server, but most likely you'd be uploading in a different way, unfortunately. Right now, CastBlaster, for example, does not support secure FTP file transfers, so you're probably going to have to use a secure FTP program to upload your file. If you're just uploading an MP3 file to Pulse as part of your course content, of course you can do that. This is what the students do. You don't need anything special. You don't need to create an RSS feed. You can merely upload the MP3 file to your course content area within Pulse. Now, of course, that doesn't constitute a podcast, but at least you can add audio files to your lecture material in that way. There's a typical help button, and when you're finished with your CastBlaster recording, you can do some primitive editing on it by cutting out sections, for example, and then of course you save. The last step would be saving it before you upload the MP3 file. So that's just very briefly some of the features. It also has a way to put in your show notes. So the text metadata that's associated with the MP3 file can include some text notes, and I use that to put in an outline of what I'm talking about during a particular podcast. So that's about all I have to say about CastBlaster right now. Again, CastBlaster can be found at www.castblaster.com. Again, all the URLs of my podcast will be on my show notes. I also wanted to mention that some interesting statistics that I ran across, some interesting facts about podcasting. I think it's beyond the fad stage, as I've been mentioning. Business Week called podcasting one of the best ideas of 2005. Rocket Boom, which is a videocast, is now available through TiVo. Duke University is expanding the use of iPods in education in the classroom, along with other schools that I'll mention. The new Oxford American Dictionary designated podcast as the 2005 Word of the Year this past December. So I think podcasting is here to stay. One thing I should mention about CastBlaster before I go is that if you go to their website, you'll see a link to see the CastBlaster video, and it's a very nice little demo of how CastBlaster works. Apple just started a program called iTunes University, and Stanford University is one of the first schools to take advantage of it. Now let me just read a little bit about it and tell you how to test it out. Okay, here it is. Apple says iTunes U is a free hosted service for colleges and universities that provides an easy access to your educational content, including lectures and interviews 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's the most powerful way to manage a broad range of audio or video content and make it available quickly and easily to students, faculty, and staff. And it is the only application that supports the overwhelmingly popular iPod. iTunes U also offers you the simplicity and mobility you expect from Apple because it is based on the same easy-to-use technology of the iTunes Music Store. Through iTunes U, users can download content to their Macs or PCs regardless of their location. They can then listen to and view the content on their Mac or PC or transfer that content to iPod for listening or viewing on the go. Now that's an Apple advertisement, although it may seem like I'm promoting this, I'm really not. I think any school would have to look at this very carefully. Stanford has gone ahead with it. One of the key issues here is that it's really designed to, as a marketing tool, to promote Apple and iPod and the iTunes Music Store. So I'm not sure how much our university, for example, would want to invite Apple into our educational environment and essentially promoting a particular proprietary brand. And there's been quite a bit of controversy about this. There's an educator named Gardner. Let me bring up his website here. Gardner Campbell. Gardner Campbell teaches literature and film at the University of Mary Washington, and he's also the assistant VP for teaching and learning technologies. And he started quite a conversation on his blog called Gardner Writes. I'll have the URL on my show notes on my blog, But he points out a lot of interesting things, pretty much similar to what I just mentioned. According to him, Apple would have to do an awful lot of things to make it make him comfortable with using Apple, using iTunes U on his college site. For one, they make it very difficult to copy URLs from iTunes to other podcatchers like Juice that I mentioned. And that's all part, I think, designed to keep iTunes U pretty proprietary. Anyway, if you're interested, look at his blog. On the other hand, there's a school of thought that educational institutions have very tight budgets, and boy, anything that's free is good. So if we can get free storage space from Apple and to promote teaching and learning, that that may outweigh the disadvantages. If you want to learn more about iTunes, especially at Stanford, by the way, they've made a lot of their content free and open to their alumni and to the general public. So you can go to itunes.stanford.edu, and when you click on their link there, it will open up iTunes on your PC or Mac and allow you to actually download and subscribe to educational content, lectures, and other audio information that Stanford has. So it's something to think about, and something that may find its way in here at Jefferson. Time will tell. For those of you who think I'm promoting Macs and iPods, it's a great device, but take a look at No iPod Required. There's actually a website called www.noipodrequired.com. Okay, one of the last topics I'd like to mention is that next week I'll be going to the Blackboard Users Conference in San Diego, and if all goes well and I have enough nerve, I'm going to do some podcasting from San Diego at the conference. I plan to have my earphone and speaker that's used for my combination Palm and cell phone, which is a Trio 600, and record podcasts on site. So we'll see how that goes. One of the stops I'm planning to make, besides the Blackboard booth, of course, at the in the exhibit hall, is a company called Tegrity. That's www.tegrity.com. They've partnered with Blackboard and have come up with an enhancement which allows podcasting to become an integral part of Blackboard. I don't know the cost. I'm sure it's not cheap. Podcasting actually comes as an offshoot of their whole so-called Tegrity campus that allows every class, if you want to do it for every class, it allows the entire class, including audio and visual material, to be captured and integrated with courseware on Blackboard. So if you're interested, go to the Tegrity site, and maybe I'll be interviewing some of these folks or otherwise reporting on it some more and seeing what I can find out about it. So that's Tegrity and Blackboard and podcasting. I'll just read you a little bit about that. This Tegrity Campus Blackboard building block enables institutions to automatically capture, store, and index every class on campus for later replay by every student. The on-demand content is accessible through Blackboard on any computer and now available on iPods as well. Each podcast is automatically indexed and enhanced with instructor audio, slides, and annotations from the class. So there you have it. That's my podcast for today. I just want to, as promised, I'm going to follow up with a promo. This is a podcast for teachers called TechPod. It's from Fordham University. I'll play that for you now and sign off, and I will see you next week. So have a good week, and the next podcast you hear will hopefully be recorded in San Diego.
Live from the Bronx, Fordham University's RETC's TechPod, a podcast for teachers, provides lively conversations about technology with leading educators. This is a podcast for teachers and learners of all ages. EdTech expert and author Mark Gura and RETC director Dr. Kathy King bring EdTech updates, tips, curriculum ideas, news, views, and research you can use on technology and education. From software applications to intimate conversations with notable and experienced educators, EdTechies, and authors, this is not your typical podcast. TechPod, Podcasts for Teachers, is published by Fordham University's Regional Educational Technology Center in the Bronx, New York City. Visit us at www.podcastforteachers.org. Live from the Bronx, providing professional development on demand and EdTech you can use today and tomorrow.